What's up, Pels fans? We are back with another episode of the Bird Calls podcast, the pod dedicated to SB Nation's TheBirdRights.com. I am joined by site editor Ali Cassell and contributor Kevin Berrios, and we will be talking Coupon, Shumpert, Frank Jackson, camp invites, and much, much more. But before we get to that, we've got a bit of breaking news here. Ali, did you change your Twitter handle?
Sure did.
I noticed that. He went from Red Hopeful, and I never got the story behind that, but now it's just straight up Ali Cassell. I was looking for you earlier on it, and Ali Cassell popped up. Good for you, man. Was that tough to acquire?
No, I saw somebody change it, and I thought, why haven't I changed mine? Because that was something I set up when I first set up a Twitter account, was when I was still a big Cincinnati Reds fan. So I was a Red Hopeful all the way through and through. But now it just makes no sense. I don't even follow the team anymore. So it's about time I changed it.
Well, it's a welcome update. We're also joined by Kevin. And Kevin, no spoilers. Where does season 7 rank in your Game of Thrones pantheon? I've got it ranked 4th.
I'd say 3rd, maybe.
3rd? Okay, that's pretty positive. All right, you two, let's get started with the most relevant news. We've got Cody Taylor of Basketball Insiders telling us that a source told him last week the Pelicans were among the teams interested in Cleveland Cavaliers forward Iman Shumpert. Since acquiring Jay Crowder from the Celtics and the Kyrie Irving training, many speculated that Shumpert could be expendable, and there were rumors that he was on the move earlier in the summer. Anyway, he's got 2 years and $21.3 million resting on the books, meaning the Pels would have to part with some version of Etuan Moore and Alexis Ajinsa or Omer Asik, oh God in heaven, and a lottery-protected first-round pick. This would be appetizing to the Cavs because they have quite obviously begun planning for the future, as confirmed by their dealings with Boston for that unprotected Brooklyn pick and Ante Zizic, however you pronounce that, versus going all in for playoff contributors. Now, Iman Shumpert is 6'5". He's about 2 inches below the average NBA starting small forward. He's well below the height of a player we'd hope could be the shutdown defender on the wing, as well as capable of contributing minutes to the four. He's a natural shooting guard, I would think. Offensively, he's a bit better than Solo, slightly. Per 36 minutes, he averaged 11 points to Solo's 9, shot 41% to Solo's 38, shot 36% from 3 to Solo's 34.8, as well as rebounded a bit more effectively. Ali, squash these rumors for us, or at least tell us why we shouldn't panic if we do acquire Iman Shumpert.
Yeah, I don't like it. I think this is just due diligence by Dell Demps. Yeah, I think he sticks his nose into pretty much any kind of offer, anywhere there's a potential to make a move, and I think that's all this is. You pretty much well laid it out. He's a shooting guard through and through, and the Pelicans roster, unless they plan on moving Etuan Moore, have no need for it. So it'd be almost kind of a, even then, if they were to just move Etuan Moore, that'd be kind of a lateral move. That's still not solving the two biggest problems, which is the Solomon Hill vacancy or void, whatever you want to declare that position at small forward, and then the fact that the Pelicans really need to put in salary, yeah, even for next year. I just recently learned that the main reason they didn't utilize the stretch provision before the deadline of the 31st of August was the fact that they didn't want to put any kind of dead weight whatsoever on future cap sheets, because it's going to be that close if they re-sign DeMarcus Cousins to a max contract. If they re-sign him, they're only going to be able to add about, about 7-8 players, more than half the roster. And they're only going to have, you know, I want to say about 20 to 25 million to play with. And that's including Asik gone off the book. So there's not much space for the Pelicans to operate by taking on a guy like Shumpert. No, I think what they're interested in is, first of all, that small forward position. They got to fill it up. I'm sure Dante Cunningham is still their number one target now. I'm inclined to think he's going to be resigned. But beyond that, they've got to be very careful what salary they add that's beyond this season.
And as many of you know, Solomon Hill cannot be traded. Injured players cannot be involved in trades, although it's a bit confusing that Isaiah Thomas was cleared, being that that is a rule. But Kevin, before I move on from Iman Shumpert, Joe Gabriel wrote on NBA.com just over a year and a half ago that some players do something so well that they really do elevate that certain skill to a true art. And there are nights where Iman Shumpert's work on the defensive end amounts to an absolute masterpiece. And this was in reference to games 3 and 4 in the Cavaliers playoff matchup against the Celtics, when Iman Shumpert shut down Isaiah Thomas to the tune of, I think it was 6 for 26. And he really did a good job on Evan Turner, who is not renowned as a great shooter, but really minimalized both of them offensively. And Evan Turner is a bit more of a small forward, though he's not as conventional as the players we think of today when we think of those 3 and D type players. Kevin, do you think Iman Shumpert is is kind of washed out as an elite level NBA defender?
I don't know about that. I mean, he's I wouldn't say he's washed out. I mean, he's an adequate defender. He's a good defender, but I mean, he doesn't give you that much more. And I mean, the only way I would even consider this move, if it was just a swap for Oshik, or maybe if you added a second round pick, cause you could stretch Shumpert and be cheaper for, you know, cause he has one less year on his deal. But like, I mean, talks of trading Etuan Moore for him, that's insane. Like, Etuan Moore is light years better than Shumpert, in my opinion. So,
agreed.
I mean, that's crazy talk. So I'd rather just stick with what we got than try to make a move for him if it's going to cost any kind of asset at all. So,
yeah, it appears it's going to cost Ashik and probably an unprotected first-round pick, which I think the Pelicans wouldn't be likely to deal with for a player of Iman Shumpert's ilk. Ali, let's move right along to Kupon. He was traded for a 2020 second-round draft pick to the Bulls for a 30-year-old international player. I can't remember his name, but it doesn't matter because he's never going to be playing in the NBA. And they also traded him for a $3.9 million salary cap break, bringing the Pelicans, and you had the calculations on this pretty specific. I think it was about 4.9 from the lottery and about 5.4 from the hard cap. What was your reaction to this move, and was it the right call? You previously just mentioned the stretching of Ashik, and I know that was something you were a proponent of. So talk about your reaction and talk about weighing this versus that decision.
I was a little surprised. Quincy Pondexter seemingly to me is making more strides than he has in his last 2 years. Now, of course, we don't know to what degree, what level, what the doctors give him in terms of how healthy his knee is. Is he at 100%? Is it 90, 80, whatever? So we're not privy to information, so we can only guess. But if he would have been close to 100%, I think he could have contributed. And I think this may come down to be kind of a bad move because, again, as I mentioned earlier, Omar Oshik, the Pelicans don't want to carry any kind of dead weight, like if they would have stretched him, waived him. But I think that additional, was a cap hit of like $3.5 million, it would have been. I think that may have been more palatable if, now this is a big if Quincy Pondexter is, you know, kind of close to playing. Small forwards like him are so hard to find for the Pelicans, you know, where they can play defense and hit that three ball. That's why I've been such a big proponent of Dante Cunningham. He's not a world beater. He's, you know, a replacement player, but the Pelicans don't even have that at the three right now. We don't know what we've got in Darius Miller. He's been out of the NBA for over 2.5 years. So there's a big, big need. And if this is do it big season for the Pelicans, if this is all or nothing, everybody's in, the Pelicans really have to, you know, put the best, you know, set of 10 players, whatever the rotation may be, out there on the floor this year. And you can't really half-ass it. And I'm just worried that trading Quincy Pondexter for salary cap relief, instead of going in another direction, may have not been the wisest decision. But again, I don't know how healthy he was, and I'm only guessing. So I don't like it. Well, you know what's going to say a lot, Preston, is we're going to see what the Bulls do. If they end up waiving him, that means for sure I don't think he's ready to contribute. But if they keep him, that means they may look to he's ready to be able to do something. They may be able to flip him later on in the season. So I think what the Bulls do really tells a lot about how healthy he is.
Yeah, it might end up being a good move if it turns out that Quincy Pondexter doesn't play. You know, I'm going to jump ahead. I was going to ask you something in a moment, but I'm so excited about it. I just have to get right into it. Ali, you know, I'm going to ask the question. I'll phrase it to Kevin first. I wouldn't be doing my job as an obsessive fan if I didn't. The Pelicans have retained orthopedic Dr. Misty Suri after Sean Payton shockingly fired both he and Derek Jones following, you know, the big partnership announcement with Ochsner and misdiagnosis of Delvin Bro's broken legs just like 8 days later. Solo tore his hamstring in L.A. Frank Jackson broke his foot. We'll talk about that in a second. Both players were operated by doctors outside of New Orleans, and Quincy Pondexter has some sort of juicy story that he's been working on with ESPN's Chris Haynes. If you guys have been privy to this on Twitter, you know, they keep retweeting each other and they keep bringing it up and mentioning it. There's obviously something coming down the pipeline, and now that he is no longer Pelican, you'd have to assume that it's gonna surface soon. I asked you this question last week, all but without Kevin. I'm going to phrase it to Kevin. I'm asking it again. Regardless of his successful run with Pelicans in 2016, Have Mickey Loomis and Dell Demps made a mistake in retaining Misty Suri?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think one thing that bothers me so much is when people are saying that we shouldn't question the medical staff because we question everything. And with the, you know, like, why is that the one thing that's off limits? You know, they're like, oh, doctors work in mysterious ways, whatever. But as far as I can tell, Misty Suri hasn't had a bad track record with this team. So, I mean, I understand it if there really wasn't a lot there to not fire them. If they're happy with him and with the work he's been doing with the Pelicans, great. But, you know, it is something that's going to make people question. And you have, like, a medical staff that's thrown up a bunch of red flags for several years now. And, you know, something like this goes down and you keep one of them. I mean, you just have to deal with the questions and expect the questions because, I mean, come on, you know, look at our history. Look at Eric Gordon, look at Quincy Pondexter, look at Tyreke Evans, look at Drew Holiday. All these guys misdiagnosed, complications from surgeries, playing when they shouldn't have played. You know, there's a lot of evidence that there's a lot of problems going on with this staff. So, it's a weird thing that they didn't do, that they didn't get rid of them. If they get rid of them for one team and they're united. But, you know, like we do say all the time is that it's two very different sports. So sharing the same medical staff is kind of weird to begin with and kind of questionable to begin with. So, but maybe they're thinking that way. Maybe this person is a perfect basketball doctor and not a great at dealing with football problems. I don't know. You know, I mean, they know better than me, but it's certainly something that is going to make me ponder, you know? I mean, it's going to make me slightly uneasy.
Ali, before I throw it to you, I definitely want to mention Kupon's infection that he had in April that flared up that kept him on the bench even longer. Omar Asik can't seem to bounce back from this illness he suffered in Mexico. We wish him the best. Solomon Hill's torn hamstring. Frank Jackson breaking the same foot again. Jarrett Jack, I can't remember what the injury was, but he was on a 10-day contract to start the year, got some kind of fracture, and then was immediately cut, although they allowed him to continue rehabilitating himself on the premises. Omri Caspi breaking a hand or breaking a thumb, and the immediate same thing happening. Give us your take on this. I already know what you're going to say, but something Jake Madison said on Locked On Pels was, if you take your eldest son to the doctor and you have a negative meeting, You wouldn't take then your next child to the same doctor, would you?
No, that's an interesting analogy. That's the first time I've heard that one. No, that kind of makes sense. And you know what? This Frank Jackson injury did raise my eyebrows. As before, as you know, I was kind of defending Dr. Suri based on kind of how last season went. But now this really raises a flag because, let's face it, when Frank Jackson first got signed by the Pelicans, almost positive the doctors, the physicians, everybody involved took a good look at him physically, did all the scans as such. And obviously nothing turned up because he was allowed to practice, rehabilitate, all that. So what I'm wondering is between then, when he first came on board to now, what exactly happened? Was it just simply he's honestly that fragile, which is another scary thought, where he was just bound to break his leg, or I'm sorry, was it the fifth metatarsal of his foot, which is that dreaded Jones fracture? Was it just because he's that fragile, or was it because that he kind of got pushed too hard, or was the fact that there was no limits on him, or were the doctors not monitoring, say, like every week, every 2 weeks, to make sure that, you know, there was not an overexertion on that bone or those bones in his foot? I don't know, but it raises definitely an eyebrow. Like I said, he's been under the New Orleans Pelicans organization since shortly after the draft, and he's already out for, you know, what, 8 months with, like I said, one of the worst foot injuries you can sustain. We don't know what his original, this is what I would love to find out, Preston, is what was his original stress fracture while at Duke? I'm inclined to think maybe it wasn't that fifth metatarsal Jones fracture, because obviously then you have to stay off your feet. So my guess is it was a different bone that was at issue, but again, it shows the susceptibility at his age that the Pelicans should have been careful with him ever since. They lit him on the floor while he's a paid player by the organization. So I don't like it. It stinks. And I love that analogy because it's beginning to ring a little true. There's already been some bad news, and we just now got into September. And you've already mentioned Asik's ongoing problem and Quincy Pondexter may have been an ongoing problem. So, yeah, I don't know. I want to stay positive and I don't want to be negative, but you got to keep an eye on this because it just doesn't look good.
And I think the major red flag is that these players aren't going to New Orleans for their surgeries. They're going all across the country, whether it be to Los Angeles or Wisconsin. Kevin, something I wanted to bring up. We talked to Jamel McMillan on the pod a few short weeks ago. Shout outs to him. Thank you so much for taking the time. I remember him being quoted while he was in Las Vegas, stating that he expected Frank Jackson to be ready to go by August 1st, that his rehabilitation was going wonderfully. And I also saw a video on Instagram and on Twitter of Frank Jackson doing these one-legged jump squats onto an elevated bench with a trainer. He was not doing this on his own. He was being very closely monitored. Do you think, like Ali said, this is another case of a player just rushing back and just pushing too hard too quickly? Or do you think the trainers have some fault in this in not just progressing him a little bit slower?
I mean, it's probably a little bit of both, you know. I mean, players definitely want to play before they're, you know, ready to play, unless you're Derrick Rose, I guess. But for the most part, you know, like we've seen, I mean, the Quincy Pondexter basically ruined his career by playing through an injury. And then we saw that with Tyreek Evans, you know, a lot of times playing when his knee wasn't ready, having to constantly getting his knee drained and having setbacks because his knee never properly healed or whatever. So, I mean, there's definitely that aspect, but considering that you got a guy that's injured already, I mean, it seems like he would be scrutinized very heavily, you know. I mean, although they're not expecting him to really play much this year, you know, you definitely don't want him to have setbacks. You know, you want his rookie season to be about learning how to defend NBA players and learning defensive schemes and getting comfortable in offense and seeing how his game works against NBA players. And getting his body adjusted to the grind of the season. And now, like, he's set back just rehabbing a foot injury and all of that gets put on hold while we weren't expecting much of him on court. You know, it's all the off court stuff and building up that he's losing out on now that would have had him more ready for when we are ready to have him on the court. So it's just unfortunate.
Ali, you had an article a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about it on the pod, about how you believe that Frank Jackson could have been ready to contribute sooner than we all expected. How disappointed are you that you're probably not going to get to see him play, at least I would hope until the All-Star break, if not later? I think his surgery and his rehabilitation is supposed to allow for him to come back by December, but I would hope that the front office would hold him out possibly for the entire year and just redshirt him.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm very disappointed. A lot of people are saying he was a rookie, he was 19, all that, but the numbers and a lot of eye tests, including, like, say, John Calipari, say this kid can shoot, and we saw his athleticism and his body. I mean, he's physically ready. I remember Austin Rivers. He came in looking like a twig, and everybody thought he'd get broken or, you know, would suffer with the size difference, and he sure did, even though the guy couldn't shoot, but still physically couldn't handle it. As to where Frank Jackson's just the opposite. So I don't really look at his age. I look at what he did on the court and his size. And if the Pelicans would have needed some help at guard, say if they suffer an injury to there, I think he could have helped. But at the very least, he would have had spent a lot of good time in the G League developing. Just like we saw with Sheck Diallo, I think that did him wonders. It would have probably done wonders for Frank Jackson. He probably had gotten his confidence sky high. He would have learned some more, you know, how to compete against NBA caliber type of players, as well as learning some of what Pelicans like to do offensively and defensively. Now he's just going to have to sit. He can't do anything. He can do nothing but watch. So, yeah, like you said, redshirt, yeah, we might as well look at this season as a redshirt season for him. And that really sucks considering how NBA contracts, how much they matter. And now all of a sudden his three-year deal, we have to really look at it as a two-year deal. There's nothing good about it. It sucks.
And now we're down to 10 healthy bodies, 11 if you consider Ashik one of those, but he's still not cleared to practice at full strength. Kevin, we have to move on to talking upgrades. We've got a void at the three. We definitely need depth at the three, the four, and Gentry even mentioned trying to find somebody who could give minutes at the two, which was a bit confusing to me since we're still five guards deep at that position. Adrian Wojnarowski on his podcast recently mentioned that some older veterans had tried out for the Pelicans and might be invited to training camp. And this is kind of funny because the Pelicans traded a small forward who hadn't played in the NBA in 2 years. So if they could try out three players who haven't played in the NBA in 2 years, welcome to the team, Chase Bunninger, Josh Smith, and Martell Webster. He also mentioned that Anthony Davis might walk into training camp and freak out when he sees these guys and considers that one of them might be playing 25 minutes per game for them this season. Kevin, how excited are you to see what these guys have left in the tank?
You've seen the movie Flatliner?
Mm-hmm.
Like the moment of death. Like I don't know, man. Like, why would you even bring in these guys? Like, there's, you could bring in Tony Allen, you could bring in some guys, Mirotić, some guys who actually have played recently and haven't totally washed out. I mean, this makes no sense. I mean, Chase Bunninger, I mean, I never liked him when he was playing quality minutes. And then Josh Smith, I mean, please. And Martell Webster, I mean, we talk about our medical staff and all these reoccurring injuries, and I'm bringing this guy, you know, I mean, like, what's the point? I don't understand at all what the point of that is. I'd rather them bring in undrafted NBA, I mean, undrafted college players to try out than any of these three.
Ollie, we've definitely seen examples of, you know, older players like Rasheed Wallace or Jared Jack come to NBA franchises and not necessarily give them 82 games of minutes, but, you know, come in for a month or two before they fall out of game shape, you know, give some reasonable NBA level minutes contributing to their team. Do you think any of these guys could possibly even get us to December?
No, not at all. And just to add to your initial assessment, Martell Webster is definitely, it sounds like, coming to Pelicans training camp. So he's definitely going to be here competing for a spot. It's up in the air whether Josh Smith and Chase Bunninger will. But the fact that the Pelicans might be able to bring in all three, wow, it really smells like a desperate measure. And as Kevin said, I don't understand why. If you look at even their numbers, and they obviously, as you said, they haven't even played in the NBA for well over a year. None of these guys can even shoot the ball. Martell Webster's got a bad back. And if I remember right, I think he retired because of that back. They said if he would have continued playing, he could have sustained some kind of, not life-threatening, but it would have somehow, his back could have reacted as to where he'd have had to deal with some kind of problem the rest of his life. I don't remember what it was. But I don't know. Scraping the bottom of the barrel just doesn't seem right. And as Kevin mentioned, there's some other players, free agents, that seem more like legitimate candidates. I don't know whether the Pelicans don't think they can sign them to like a veteran minimum like they're seeking to do. But maybe this is just Dell Demps honestly doing that due diligence. You know, you got to look under every rock. Maybe you can find a surprise. Because let's face it, he's known for finding those surprises all across Europe and Russia and, you know, the rest of the world. And some have contributed, like Gustavo Ayon, Luke Babbitt, even Alexia Jensa. So maybe that's his thinking. I don't know. But like Kevin, I don't have any confidence in this group. I don't expect any of them to play decent minutes. Woj is right. If it does turn out that way, Anthony Davis is going to be staring at the exit sign above the doors.
Oh, man, so much gloom and doom on this podcast. Go ahead, Kevin.
I was just going to say, as a huge fan of Wallace the Society, I'm offended that you would even mention him in regards to this. I would take Rasheed Wallace right now over any of those guys.
Oh, man. So right now in training camp, we're looking at a very reasonable case could be made for Charles Cook or Jalen Jones making this team. Jamel McMillan said Jalen Jones had a lot of Dante Cunningham in him. Also, you'd have to wonder if James Young will get an invite to camp now. And we're still waiting to hear on Dante Cunningham and Tony Allen. God, this saga just continues. We're 2 months into free agent. We can't get these guys to make a decision yet. Ollie, first of all, what's taking so long?
Well, with Dante Cunningham, what I fully expect to be, at first it was a money issue, but now that they've got the money for next year, that's not the problem. But the problem now is I think it's the years. I think Cunningham's seeking multi-years, and the Pelicans, they don't want to add that additional salary for the following season, the 2018-19 season. That's why Clark, Rondo, whoever else were just signed these one-year veteran minimum deals, because that cap sheet's going to be overladen if everything works out and Cousins takes a max contract. Suddenly you're paying him, Davis, and Drew Holiday almost like, was about 80 $80 million, I want to say, somewhere. Just, and then, of course, you throw in Solomon Hill and Antoine Moore, and then, boom, you're at 100. And if I remember right, the luxury tax line is going to be at 125. So that's like your do-not-pass-go line for this organization. So you've got $25 million to spread out over the remaining 10 players on the roster. So you can see why they're scared, why they didn't utilize that stretch provision, like I said, this past week. So Dante Cunningham is being held up because of this. My guess is he's probably going to take a one-year deal, probably an option for the second year. And that's all the Pelicans are going to give him. I'm sure he's taking at least a three-year deal, you know, in the range of maybe $12 million, but I don't think the Pelicans are going to give it to him. They're just going to go above what they can, you know, beat out the Timberwolves, who sound like they're already out of it. I think I heard them signing some free agent today, or was it yesterday? And I know the Bucks are supposedly still in, but again, they've only got to beat I think the Bucks can offer the most is about $2.5 million, something in that range. So they don't have much to beat. But again, I'm sure Cunningham wants to be paid and taken care of on a multi-year deal, and the Pelicans probably don't want to give it to him.
And Kevin, we've got about $4.7 million to spare, somewhere around that, before we hit the luxury tax, $5.4 before the dead cap. But we still have multiple roster spots to fill. Not only do we have an absence at the guard position now with Frank Jackson going down and losing Solo and Quincy Pondexter, but we're still looking for a third big that can give us about 15 to 20 minutes a night. Kevin, are you comfortable giving Dante Cunningham the remainder of our open cap flexibility? Like all of it, I mean?
Ideally you wouldn't want to give them all of it, but if it's on a one-year deal and that's all you can do and really looking around the scrap heap, you can't find anything and there's no trades to be made, sure, why not? Because he knows the system, he knows the team, he shoots 40% from three, he defends, he fills minutes at the three and minutes at the backup four, which are necessary. So really signing him is like signing two players in a way, because you're filling two holes, the biggest holes in your roster right now. I prefer to bring in two players, but if we can only bring in one, I'd want it to be Dante.
No, they got to make a two, Kevin. There's no way. With that 4.7, they just got rid of Quincy and a future draft pick. I think, and as Preston mentioned, 10 healthy players. Let's not even count Omer Sheik, whether he's truly 100% or not. He's not going to contribute anyway. So I think they have to sign Cunningham and another player. What's that, Kevin? Go ahead.
Are we getting close to being in some sort of territory like a Chris Bosch situation where we could maybe possibly apply for, you know, him not being fit to play basketball and get, his salary off the books kind of thing? Or is that even a thing that
is... That's an interesting question. I've heard of some people having infections for well over a year, where they can't figure it out. So maybe that is an idea. I never even considered that. That's a good idea. I mean, not for Omer. Well, I dread that. I don't hope that on Omer at all, but maybe they could go down that route. If he never gets healthy, you're right.
Yeah, well, health insurance is definitely something that comes into play here. I know that the Pelicans were not paying Quincy Pondexter out of pocket. Health insurance was going towards his salary. So you'd have to wonder if that's going to be a similar situation with Omer Asik. Having him on the books, actually, by point of fact, could be saving Tom Benson around $11 million. Another reason possibly to retain him a bit longer. I want to wrap this up. We do have a question from Pelicans fan 97 that I want to get to. But before that, looking back now, let's start with Kevin. How much does that Drew Holiday contract, including its incentives, how much has that crippled us this offseason?
I mean, it's terrible. I mean, if he would have just taken $20 million, which is still an overpay for what he brings to the table, like we wouldn't have had to trade Quincy Pondexter. You could have signed Dante, and we wouldn't have been talking about being up against the hard cap. And you know, we could have had Dante and still kept Quincy to see if he was going to work out, or you trade Quincy and you still have another, you know, $4 million, $3 million to bring somebody else in. Also, I mean, it's just a shame that he held us over the coals so bad on that, because you know, it doesn't seem like that much in the long run, I guess, $4 million a year, but it, when you're talking about three players making that much money on your roster, it really adds up.
Ali, when we look around the league this offseason, a lot of quality players went at bargain-level deals, like Jonathan Simmons, P.J. Tucker, Luke Bamute, Omri Caspi went at the minimum, just to mention a few names. Obviously, I'm not covering some of the higher-profile players. But, Ali, when you think of the money that just the incentives portion of Jrue Holiday's contract could have given us, how do you grade this contract given to Holiday as anything above an F?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, I'm with Kevin that I don't like the contract, and boy, is it really hurting now. He's going to have to play like that superstar, that third superstar almost on the team, at least an all-star level. I should say, I don't know why I'm saying superstar. We know that's not going to happen. Preston, are you asking for a grade? I'm sorry, I misheard that last part.
Well, I didn't phrase it very intelligently. Basically, I was just asking the two of you to summarize. Like, at the time when Jrue Holiday was given its contract, 5 years, $125 million, I think we all kind of gave it like a C-. But once that incentive-laden part of his contract came to fruition and we found that whether or not he gets that money, we can't use it, how harmful was it, not just long-term, knowing that money is going to be on his books throughout the life of his five-year contract, but this is, by all accounts, the most important offseason the Pelicans have faced in their short 11-year history. And I guess, how do you look at it as anything other than just like a total unpremeditated disaster?
I gotcha. Yeah, well, I'm sure, you know, Dell Demps didn't expect Frank Jackson to go belly up and then Dante Cunningham maybe not to be, you know, maybe he thought he could play hardball and win. Maybe they expected Quincy Pondexter to be further along. I don't know what was in their heads, but I agree. Either way, you give Jrue Holiday that money, you tie up so much of that cap. And once you invoke the hard cap, which the Pelicans had to do because they had to add a lot of players, and so they're going to have to use the non-taxpayers MLE or the biannual, which they still have in their pocket. But again, they needed to use all that sum of money because they had no cap space. They were over the cap line. They had to use all these exceptions to bring players in. So we could have always anticipated them hard capping themselves. But the fact that Drew's Holiday's contract was for so much money, as you mentioned, it's not just the guaranteed portion. It's the fact of all these incentives, whether they're likely or unlikely. That kills. That absolutely hurts. That's like saying, here's $8 million that you can't play with because you've got a couple of trade exceptions. That could have been used to the Pelicans' advantage. They still had that $3.2 million biannual. That could have been used. And I think they've got about roughly 2.2 of the MLE. So all of that could theoretically have been used had they not been so close to the hard cap. But because they are, and why is that, is the Holiday contract. So yeah, it's looking worse and worse by the day, and we haven't even gotten the first game yet.
Yeah, we still have 2.2 available, the MLE, 3.3, the full BAE, and we still have trade exceptions of 2 and 3.5. That's according to Keith Smith of Real GM. You guys, this has been such a sour podcast. I'd like to have a bit of fun before we let you go. And of course, we're still going to get to Pelicans Fan 97. Let's talk about NBA 2K. I would assume that Kevin is the video game player of the two of you. But this week, it's come out that Anthony Davis has the highest rated score of any power forward, and DeMarcus Cousins has the highest rated score of any center. So at least the video game creators think that these are going to be the two best players at their respective positions in the NBA. Although a lot of experts only have us winning 40 games, it's got to be a positive sign that we have two top 20 players. How excited were you when you saw that report, Kevin?
Well, I mean, that didn't sway me in any way. I mean, I'm looking at the players, and I know that they are like two of the best players in the league, and so that didn't really matter. Now, I do like playing 2K, so it's cool that you know, seeing their ratings and that they're the highest at their position, and then both are in the top 10. And also, I saw somebody had gotten the whole Pelicans roster with the ratings, and yeah, I think Holiday, if I'm not wrong, was either that. It was like an 80. So then you got a 90. I think what Anthony Davis was like a 96 or something, and DeMarcus Cousins 92, and then the third best player is the 80. I mean, that's a good foundation for playing basketball video games, especially if you can make Jrue attack by controlling him. So I mean, the video game aspect didn't sway me in any way. I mean, I'm looking at the team, and I'm higher on this team than most people are, I think, even with the Hill injury, and I'm a big fan of Hill. Like, I think that Solomon Hill is a good player. and I think he will be really good for a while. But, you know, I think, yeah, it's a good team to play with. I mean, it's like one of the best things about it is we have those huge mismatches that, you know, people can't. You just pound them in the paint, and then you can also shoot from the outside, and you rebound. It's a good team to play with.
Ollie, do you play video games at all?
I used to play a ton of them, but the last few years I've actually stopped pretty much playing them. It sucked. Now you're making me miss it.
Yeah, it must be pretty cool for Pelicans fans to have two fantastic players on the team. So maybe it translates to wins in the regular season. But if nothing else, that's the lone fun story that we've had to report on this week. Now let's get to a question from Pelicans fan 97. I'm going to start this one off because I already did a bunch of research on it, being privy to the question before you guys. Basically, he just asks about trade options, Wilson Chandler and Terrence Ross. And before I throw it to you guys, just so I can give you guys a head start, I thought Terrence Ross would be the better candidate just because the Magic are kind of glutted at small forward. They've just acquired Jonathan Simmons on a 3-year deal. They've obviously got Jonathan Isaac can go over there, Wesley Iwundu, Aaron Aflalo, Mario Hezonja, and Evan Fournier can all give minutes at that position. Plus, he's got 2 years and $20 million that they would probably want to offload, and that could be a circumstance where the Pelicans could offload somebody like Ashik for an unprotected 2018 pick because, you know, the Magic aren't doing anything right now. So, you know, what's taking one guy who can't play in exchange for a really highly rated draft pick? And I like that better than Wilson Chandler, even though Wilson Chandler fits with us because the Nuggets actually really need Wilson Chandler, and Wilson Chandler is in the last year of his guaranteed contract. He's got a player option for the following season, 2018-19. So we could be paying, fool's gold for 1 year of this guy, and we'd be giving up a great amount to get him. Now, with that being said, Ollie, what's your take on these two guys being in Pelicans uniforms?
I like the idea of Terrence Ross. I know Dell Demps was high on Terrence Ross before even the draft. And then I don't know if he's ever tried to trade for him since. He was drafted by the Toronto Raptors and he was up there. I'm not sure if he's ever chased them, but yeah, that's an interesting idea because obviously the Magic are going to have no use for the guy. And that contract is definitely palatable as long as, you know, the Pelicans could send out some money like with Omar Ashik or somebody like that. I've always loved Wilson Chandler, but you nailed it on the head. I don't see how or why the Denver Nuggets would trade him away. They're fighting for the playoffs. They've got rid of Gallinari, so their depth has gone down. And Wilson's on a very good contract too. So I don't see him as being a likely target at all unless today's Denver Nuggets suffer some kind of injury or they just simply don't meet expectations. I'm not even looking at him. But Terrence Ross, I like him. I like the idea of him. That might be a good get for the Pelicans.
Yeah, there's just an absence of talent around the NBA at a small forward right now. The Nuggets are loaded at guard and they've got big men in Trey Lyles, Tyler Lydon, Paul Millsap, and Juan Hernan Gomez to go along with their five great guards who can't see the floor. They just have too many of them. So small forward is the one position that we need, and it's the most difficult one to get. What's your take on this, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with Ollie and you. I do like Terrence Ross. I mean, he's a good player. But at the same time, like, if I'm trading Ashik in a first for him, sure. I don't think I would give up Etuan Moore to get him. I'm just thinking of salaries that you would have to put together to grab him. In terms of Wilson Chandler, I'm also a big fan of his. I really love that crazy baby head neck tattoo right on his Adam's apple. That's something that's pretty special to me. But I agree about, 1 year on his contract and you have to, you know, deal with that situation in the off season. I mean, I'm all about Dell Demps bringing Dante back and then using the trade exception to get another young vet and overpay in to pry somebody away from a team, you know, make them like a godfather offer, because let's face it, this is the season, you know. If you can't convince Boogie to come back, then you likely are starting to have to think about Anthony Davis going away. And if you throw a bunch of a couple of draft picks and a draft swap to get like a nice young vet on this team. You got a young guy that's still under a contract that's team controlled that can grow with the team but still contribute, fill in some holes. That's great. And at the end of the day, if it all fails and Boogie walks, then anything you gave up to get those guys, you could recoup with an Anthony Davis trade if we have to come to that, you know, if that's the unfortunate situation. But, you know, I'm high on this team. I think they'll bring him back, and I think now's the time to really cash in everything you can to build a roster. And, you know, if you're looking at – I'm talking about guys that you don't hear about on the trade market, but if you look at their teams, you could make a case for the team saying, okay, I can get rid of this guy for this offer because I have other people on this team already to fill in, and they're offering me two first and a pick swap or something like that, you know. We can go into details if you want, but I think maybe we save that for another pod because we're trying to wrap this one up.
Kevin, that's exactly what I was going to say, is I actually wanted to dive into this, and that's why I put Pelicans Fan 97 on the end of this, because next time when we talk, hopefully Tuesday before or around noon, whenever you're available, it seems like the only way the Pelicans are going to be able to acquire talent at this point is what we all dread, what we all feared, but what we all ultimately like knew was going to happen is the Pelicans are going to have to unload highly coveted picks. They're going to have to give away their 2018, potentially even their 2020, because not only do they have to bring in talent, but we're going to have to offload some of the stuff that we have in New Orleans, like Ashik or Ejinsa, and that's going to require sweeteners. And so the next time we talk, that's something I really want to dive into. Hopefully no news breaks before we get to it. For all of you guys, thank you all for listening. We love what we do, and we appreciate your support and your downloads so much. Thank you for taking the time. If you really love us, give us a retweet, help spread the word. Thank you to Ali, the most supportive and encouraging editor I've had all around, just a good guy. Kevin, also a great guy, always being available, letting me poke fun at him from time to time and talk Game of Thrones. You guys can follow them now at Ali Cassell. Red Hopeful is no longer there. And Kevin B for Bounce. My name is Preston Ellis. If you have any questions, direct them to me at Preston Ellis, and I'll read them on the very next pod. And Ali, what have we got coming up on thebirdrights.com this week?
I'm going to finally finish my little Darius Miller piece. It's going to be a player preview, but it's just basically going to be my scouting report. I just finished watching his last game yesterday, so I just got to compile the notes. I think I'm going to write it all up tomorrow. So look for it Monday. That's the next thing.
Nice. Kevin, any parting shots?
I was just going to ask Ali. I signed up for doing a player preview for Omer Asik. Can I just send a picture of the bench?
Absolutely, man. I can't believe you even signed up for it. I knew it was a joke.
Well, I'm done with it. So.
All right. Nice work, you guys. Thank you so much for your time. And I'll talk to you guys soon, hopefully on Tuesday. So you guys can look out for that. And as always, I know it's a lot of doom and gloom, but we are fans of this team. Let's go, Pels.